That leads us into the third question that we need to wrestle with if we're going to be effective ministers of this mystery that God has given to us. Why did God do this? Why did God decide to build a temple like this? Why did God decide to inhabit this temple? Why did God decide to use the kind of stones that he did? Why did God decide to take people like the Apostle Paul and give them the responsibility to administrate the mystery about this temple? Why did God do it this way? What was God up to? What is God doing in the church? And the answer is, he is using this temple to display something. The temple that God is building, the church that you and I are a part of, is intended to display something. Think about the function of a temple in the Old Testament. Or think about the function of a temple in the city of Ephesus during the time Paul wrote this to the Ephesians. What was a temple supposed to do? A temple was supposed to magnify the worthiness of the deity that it was dedicated to. You could tell how important the deity was by the size and the beauty of the temple dedicated to him. I've had the privilege of going to Greece and being at cities like Corinth, a city full of temples. I've been in Athens and I've seen the ruins of temples. And even in their ruined state, they are breathtaking. They are magnificent. And yet they are of different sizes, and so you can see which gods were the major gods and which gods were the minor gods by the size of the temple that was dedicated to them. A temple was designed to show the worth of the god and the beauty of the god and the power of the god. And so the greater the temple, the bigger the temple, the more majestic the temple, the more beautiful the temple, the more worth was ascribed to God. And in the city of Ephesus was one of the most beautiful temples of all time, the Temple of Diana, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. When you looked at that temple, you saw a marvel architecturally. You saw the beautiful pillars that soared 60 feet or higher into the air, adorned at the top with gold plating, each of them dedicated by a king. When you saw the marble that was quarried and polished and placed in that temple, when you saw the temple, everything about the temple was designed to magnify the worth and the beauty of that goddess. You know what? God has a temple. And he's been building it for 2,000 years. It is a living, holy, growing temple. And God intends to do something through that temple. He is trying to display his glory and his worth to all of the angelic beings in heaven. He is trying to display through the church his mercy. Chapter 2, we read that. And he is trying to display through this temple his wisdom. Look at verse 10. You see it right there in verse 10? That through the church, God intends to demonstrate his multifaceted wisdom to all of the principalities and powers in heavenly places. There are people looking at this temple that God is building. And it's more than just the people who are in it. There are people in God's universe, there are intelligent creatures in God's universe that are beholding what God is doing, and they are marveling at God's wisdom in doing this. How in the world are you going to take people and build a temple out of them? I don't understand how you're going to do that. God says, let me show you. Here's my wisdom. It is a wisdom that is so wise that to the world it looked like utter foolishness. To those who are perishing, the preaching of the cross is to them that perish what? Foolishness. How are you going to build this temple? Let me show you. I'm going to take my son and I'm going to send him down and he is going to die a voluntary, violent death. And that's how I'm going to build my temple. And it's as though, how in the world is that going to work? I mean, I thought you said he was going to be the ruler of that temple. I thought you said he was going to be the head of that temple. How in the world is he going to do that when he goes down and dies so that you can even build it? God says, let me tell you about my wisdom. My wisdom is wiser than men. The wisdom of God is seen in the power of the cross. What looks like utter weakness and utter foolishness becomes the most powerful thing in God's universe, because by the resurrected power of Christ, we have freedom from the very thing that would have nailed us to that cross. And instead of being victims on the cross, we are now living examples of holy things in God's temple. You say, well, I never would have thought of that. That's why it's God's wisdom. That's what's on display. And then there's God's grace, his rich, unmeasurable grace. Why would God even care about stones like us? Why would he even care about people who were so wretched and wicked in our sins? Why would even God care about people who were living in utter rebellion without a thought for him? Why would God care? And the answer is because he is a God of grace. You know what the temple of God displays? The temple of God displays God's wisdom and God's grace. And that leads us into the fourth question that we have to wrestle with if we're going to be effective ministers of this mystery. How did God do this? And how does he do this? We know what he's doing. He's building a temple. We know where that temple is. It's the church. We know why God is doing this. God intends for that temple to be the primary display in his universe of his wisdom and of his grace. But how does he do that? And the answer is, he does it in the mystery of the gospel. He does it in the mystery of Christ. You see that right away in verse 3. Paul says, I have been entrusted with a mystery. That mystery is something that originated with God. That is something that comes right out of God's wisdom. It is something that you and I cannot discover on our own. God has to show us that wisdom. And it is something that has to do with Christ. Whatever this mystery is that God has to show us, it is all about his Son, Jesus Christ. And what the mystery is all about is bringing people who were far off and making them to be fellow heirs and partakers and members of God's family. You know what happened because of this mystery of Christ? I went from somebody who was running away from God and hating God to somebody who could look at God and say, Abba, Father. You know what Abba means? Abba is an Aramaic word, and it means father. That, if you look it up in a dictionary, the word Abba means father. But the technical dictionary definition of Abba, father, doesn't capture the beauty of that word. What captures the beauty of that word is a little child looking at their father and seeing their father from a distance and all of a sudden breaking into a loud cry, Dad, Dad, Dad. And you can see that little kid just running down wherever that dad is, just legs just flying, arms pumping, big smile on the face, ready to jump right into the arms, crying out, Dad, Dad. That's Abba. That's Abba. That's what we're talking about here. You know what I was like? I was like Adam in the Garden of Eden, hiding from God. I didn't want Abba. When I saw God, I didn't go running. I went hiding from God. And so did you. So what happened? Grace happened. God's grace reached down into your life and changed you from a God-hater into a God-lover. Everything about you changed. You have become a minister of this mystery because you have personally experienced it. You who were at one time an enemy of God have now been made a fully adopted son or daughter of God. You have been given all the rights of sonship. You can come into the very presence of God boldly, we are told in the book of Hebrews. that we're to enter into his presence confidently, having a conscience that has been sprinkled by his blood. We are constantly told to come in and to let our requests be made known with joy and with freedom. And folks, it wasn't always like this for us. There was a time when we were stones under God's wrath. We were the objects of divine just wrath. And then God's grace came, and everything changed. I mean, completely. And we have been made ministers of that grace. We have been made ministers of that gospel because we have experienced it personally. And then secondly, because we have proclaimed it and must proclaim it publicly. I mean, in verse 8, we are told that we're to announce it confidently. Paul said, "To me, who am less than the least of all the saints, this grace was given that I should preach or announce among the Gentiles the unsearchable riches of Christ." This mystery is all about those unsearchable riches of Christ. I mean, you who were less than a pauper in sin, you who were bound up in the prison house of Satan's sinful fear, have not just been set free by the cross. You have been enriched beyond belief as a child of God.
We'd like to pause for a moment during the broadcast today to thank you for being a part of our Word for Life family. We're just so thankful for how the Lord is blessing this opportunity to be added as programming in your area. So, right now, we're offering you a free CD copy of one of Pastor Sam's 10 most requested sermons as our gift to you, just for contacting us today. So, please call us right now, toll free at 1-866-551-8935 and ask for your free gift. That's 1-866-551-8935. Don't forget to include your name, address, and telephone number, and we'll place your gift in the mail right away. You can also visit us on the web at www.thewordforlife.org and sign our guest book. Contact us today, and we'll also include you on our list to receive a free subscription to the Word for Life magazine. It's a monthly publication packed with Bible studies from Pastor Sam Horn, but there's also plenty of information on ministry and even more. It's an invaluable resource both for you and your family. So, contact us today by calling 1-866-551-8935 or visit us online at www.thewordforlife.org. And now let's return to today's message. Here's Pastor Sam.
And Paul says, as a minister of this, you need to go tell everybody. You need to go and announce this. You need to help everybody see the unsearchable riches of God's grace. And the reason that you're qualified to announce it to everybody is because you ought to understand it. You've experienced it. You're to proclaim it confidently and explain it clearly. Look at verse 9. Paul says, "And to make all see or understand, and to make all see what is the fellowship of the mystery, which from the beginning of the ages has been hidden in God, who created all things through Christ." You're to explain it clearly. When people say, "I don't understand what you're talking about," you ought to know enough about the gospel to be able to say this: "I once was blind, but now I see. And the only explanation I have for that is a relationship that I found with Jesus Christ." You don't have to go to Bible school to explain this mystery. You don't have to have a doctorate in theology to explain this mystery. You don't have to have books on your shelf on every theological topic. All you have to do is be able to say, "I once was blind, but now I see. And the reason that I can see now is because I met a person named Jesus Christ, and he changed my life. He changed everything for me." What did you have to do? I didn't have to do anything. I just had to come in faith. I mean, what did it cost you? Well, it didn't cost me anything. Well, I mean, it's going to end up costing me everything, but it didn't cost me anything to start with. The price was fully paid by him. So you mean, you were blind and now you see, yes, and it happened because you met a person named Jesus Christ, yes, And he paid everything, yes, and all you had to do was commit your life to him. That's right. Now, folks, you don't have to have a degree to do that. You just have to be willing to speak up. That's what Paul's saying when he says, you were made a minister of this mystery. He's not talking about selling all your stuff and going off to Bible college. He's talking about just living your life and opening up your mouth and telling people what happened to you. Here's what I was, here's what I am, and you know what? Jesus Christ is the reason. And guess what? When you do that, you are a living, growing stone in God's temple. Let me give you the last thing as we finish this morning. You must persevere as a minister in this mystery. You must persevere as a minister in this mystery. This mystery that God is revealing through the church so that he will get great glory from all of the created beings in the universe when they see his mercy and they see his wisdom is a mystery, a secret that has been openly revealed. Anybody can know it now. There was a time when nobody knew it but God. Now God has revealed it, and it is an open secret that he wants everybody to know. That his wisdom and his grace have been exercised in a person's life so that they become part of this temple that displays that wisdom and that grace to an entire universe. And if you and I are going to be ministers of that mystery, then we have to persevere. We have to know it personally. We have to proclaim it publicly. And we have to pursue and persevere in it faithfully. We have to do that in spite of how we feel about ourselves sometimes. You know, sometimes it's harder for us to forgive ourselves than to accept the forgiveness of God. I mean, Paul says it himself. Look, if you will, right there in the text. He says that this mystery was given to him in verse 8, who was the least of all the saints. Why do you think Paul thought himself as the least of all the saints? Well, Pastor Sam, if it's really obvious, the guy's humble. What do you want him to say? I'm the greatest? God is so lucky to have me? After all, I am an apostle. Of course he's going to say he's the least of the saints. That's the humble thing to say. But can I suggest to you that maybe, in fact, Paul did believe that? And it wasn't just because he was trying to be pious or maybe respectably humble. That maybe in his mind, he really did believe that he was the chief of sinners. I mean, think about what happened here. What did Paul do before he became a stone in God's temple? You remember what he did? He spent his adult life persecuting the stones that God was preparing and equipping for that temple. In fact, he tried to tear that temple down any chance he got. He blasphemed. He attempted to destroy it. He persecuted the members of those churches. He literally took their lives. And then one day God said, Paul, I want to show this grace to you. I want to take you and I want to put you right here so everybody can see the power that I have to save somebody like you. I want to put you right here, and you are going to be for the church, in the church, a display of my ability to take people who were deeply entrenched in their sin and who were there for a very long time and whose sin did a great deal of damage to others. And I want to show how I can take somebody like that and give them grace. I want to take somebody like that. And actually, Paul, you know what's going to happen because of my grace and my strength in your life? You who were at one time a persecutor of this church, you're going to be the person that is going to do more, humanly speaking, to build and preserve my church. And you know why, Paul? Not because you're making up for what you did before, but because I want to show my grace to you. You're going to be a display of that grace. Folks, it doesn't matter what your past wickedness has been like. The grace of God is sufficient. It doesn't matter how bad you were or how long you were bad. The grace of God can lift you up and put you in that temple as a display of God's grace. It doesn't matter how weak you think you are. Some people don't really wrestle with this because they think they were too wicked for God to really do much more than just save them. But some people don't really effectively minister the mystery because they are too weak. They think that our circumstances are just too overwhelming and there's nothing we can do. And we've looked at our circumstances and they have so limited us that it's all we can do in our minds just to be a Christian. And Paul says, wait a second. It is those limiting circumstances themselves that sometimes become the greatest display of God's grace and God's power. I mean, God is literally saying sometimes, I'm going to take people and I'm going to appoint for them some of the most limiting circumstances that can be conceived. And then in the midst of those limiting circumstances, I am going to do great things. And when you see the great thing and you look at the circumstances out of which it comes, you are going to marvel at my power to do this. There are times when God takes people who were exceptionally wicked and he uses them to do great things for the gospel so that we will marvel at God's grace. There are times when God takes people who are so limited and whose circumstances are so afflicting and he does great things so that we will marvel at his power. And in either case, the power and the glory and the mercy are all of him and not of the vessel. We know what God is doing. He's building a temple. We know where that temple is. It's the church. We're part of that. We know that he is trying to display something in that church. He is trying to, through the church, display his mercy and his wisdom and his grace and his power. And by the way, folks, how can we be that kind of a display if we're at odds with one another? How in the world are we going to display those things that God wants to display if we can't stand one another? And we're backbiting and devouring one another. How's that going to work? We know what God is doing through the church. He's trying to display his glory. And we know how he does this. He does this through the mystery of Christ in us and through us. So how should it cause us to live? How's it going to make a difference when you walk out? Let me ask you a question this morning. Are you a minister of this grace? You say, well, I don't have, you know, some huge, horrible circumstance. That's wonderful. Are you a minister of this grace in the circumstances that you have right now? Or are you so upset at God for what's going on in your life that you aren't telling anybody about him? Are you a minister of this grace? Are you so frustrated at your marriage? Are you so frustrated with your mate? Are you so frustrated with your kids and what's happening or not happening in their life that you have literally become a person who is no longer ministering this mystery to others? Or are you a person who is rejoicing even in the midst of your misery and saying to God, it is your strength, it is your grace, it is your power that I want to operate in? Are you? I mean, this is honest. This is right where we live, right? This is where all of us live every day. We got to go out in the parking lot and get in our car and we got to go back to our life, whatever that life is. And for some of us, it's not real fun right now. And God says, wait a minute. Are you willing to let me demonstrate my grace and my mercy and my glory and my power in the middle of that? Or are you going to sit and pout? Are you going to sit in anger and in bitterness? Are you going to sit around and justify all the things that you're not doing or all the things that I told you not to do that you're doing because you're ticked at me? Or are you going to be a minister of the mystery in the place where I put you? Do you think I don't know about your circumstance? You think I can't change that for you in one moment? I want you there because I want to display something right now through you. Will you let God display it? Or are you going to continue to tell God what to do with your life? I mean, that's been our problem all along, isn't it? We want to tell God what to do with our life, and God never asked us. God never came and said, hey, you know what? I'm really curious about what to do with your life. I just can't figure it out. You got any ideas? That's not how God operates. God has a perfect plan for our life, and it doesn't always include the things we think it should include. And God says, you know what? I didn't ask you about that. What I'm wanting to do is I'm wanting to display something. I'm wanting to display my power. I'm wanting to display my mercy. I'm wanting to display my grace. You see, Pastor Sam, you know what? That's not really fun. It isn't fun. It's not supposed to be fun. What kind of Christianity is that? I came to church today to... Wait a second. It isn't about us. Welcome to the church that isn't about you. I mean, really, it isn't. You know what's happened to us? The church has become all about us. What we want, what we need. And you know what, folks? It isn't about us. It never was about us. It has always been about Him and His glory. And if we could get that straight, everything would change. But honestly, folks, really, do you get it? How long are we going to sit around in church doing the church thing, ticked at God because it isn't going the way we think it should go? We're ticked at somebody. We're ticked at this or we're ticked at that. We don't like the hymn books because we wanted blue ones and they're red. I mean, how long does it go on in our life? Or are we really going to catch what God is doing? That He is building a temple and He is displaying this temple, His glory and His power. And His, I mean, if we could catch that, it would change everything. Our lives would be so different. We need to catch that.